accession number 18493, real one.
Mr. Arnold Lupton, 2nd Royal Tanks, tape 1.
That's
Tell
it.
Me, when were you born?
I was born on 6th November 1919.
Where were you born?
Southport, which is curious because that's no more a port than Stockport is. But
did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers, younger than me. One, what would he be? He was 5.5 years younger than me. He died a few years ago. And the other one, 8 years younger than me, he lives in Devon. So I see him occasionally. And he spent a lot of time out in Nigeria, 35 years, I think. Government service. Anyway, I was born in Southport. My parents were from Accrington originally. Well, the father was. My mother, her father, came down from Scotland, a doctor, and settled in Accrington to open a practice there. Scotland, I think, was cluttered up with doctors. That's how I came about in 1919.
What did your father do?
He was, really sales manager for a firm selling textile machinery in India. And his main centre there was Bombay, but he had to travel all around. India then was what is now India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and so on.
Did that mean he was away from home a lot?
Yes, he was only home, a few months. Not every year, every 2, 3, or 4 years, I suppose, because he used to have to sail then. And trouble was that my mother couldn't stand the climate there, so eventually in 1929 he had to come back to England. Sorry, and couldn't carry on really in the same style of business, because although they had an office in Manchester, they hadn't got accommodation to sort of take on a director from the Bombay office. So he set up in motor business in Wallington near Croydon, and had an agency for Armstrong Siddeley's, which were very good motors in those days. And I in the meantime went to boarding school from about the age of 5 onwards until I finished eventually at City Freeman School in Ashstead Park, in Ashstead, Surrey. Then he, through a friend, because jobs were difficult to get in those days, managed to find me a job in Barclays Bank, DC&O, in London.
What's DC&O?
Sorry, Dominion Colonial and Overseas, it was then. They had a special section which was all over the world in different places. And I stuck it for 3.5 years. But it was really long enough to be in banking, and the idea was that in the DC&O you would eventually get yourself travelling around a bit, around the world, but it was going to be an awful long business. So in back end of 1938 I tried to join the Metropolitan Police. They turned me down for what they said was varicose vein. which still carries me around very well. And so after that I went along to Whitehall and joined the army. And the recruiting sergeant there, who had been, I think, in one of the Guards regiments, tried to get me in the Guards, but I said, no, thank you. You could get a bit of choice in those days. I don't want to walk, I'd rather ride, see, so. So I was joined up into the Royal Armoured Corps, as it had then just become, because the cavalry, who, I'm sorry, we always referred to as donkey bashers, were joined up and they became all together the Royal Armoured Corps. But then I went down to Bovington, beautiful place in Dorset. Well, not bad. I went down last year again to have a look at it when the Queen went down. And then when I'd finished training down there, which, by the way, the first day I got there, I became known as Harry, because nobody could be bothered with a name like Arnold. And they said, oh, you're going to be Harry. So that was it. And
didn't anything particularly prompt that?
No, I think they just found it easier than Arnold, you know. And
Before we get too far ahead on your army career, can we just go back a little bit to school? You say you went to boarding school. Which was your first boarding school?
Well, it was in Southport, because my maternal grandparents at that time lived in Ainsdale, just outside Southport, and they couldn't accommodate me with all the other people in the house, so, and my parents, I think, sent me to this place in Southport run by two, well, they seemed old then, they probably were fairly old ladies, and one brother of theirs. It was quite a good school, taught us all that we needed to be taught, I suppose, at that time.
Can you remember what you were taught?
Oh, you know, English and what, mathematics and I don't know what else at that particular time.
So this was, what age were you then, when you started?
Five, when I started.
And how long were you
there? I went there, I should think, 3, possibly 4 years. Then, yes, would be then my father came home from India to live in this country, and he lived down in this place, Wallington, near Croydon. And so I was moved from Southport, was sent down to Eastbourne, another very nice place, where I was very well schooled, not only in English and maths, but French, Latin, everything else you could think of, you know, and it really was exceptionally a good teaching.
You remember the name of the school by any chance?
Yes, it's not there now. Neville House School it was. I tried to look it up a few years ago when I was using up a rail ticket and went down there. couldn't find it. Now,
but that was you were impressed with that, were you? I mean, did you actually enjoy being in boarding school, or did that upset you a bit leaving home?
I'd always been in it, and it was just natural, which was probably why the army wasn't a big blow when I came to that, but because I'd been used to being in boarding schools all the time. Even after going to Neville House School in Eastbourne, I then went to one in Ashstead Park, which is near Leatherhead. I was still boarding there. And, I mean, I was only a cock stride away, you might say, from Wallington, but it was still boarding. That was also very enjoyable as far as schools are concerned.
Was this where you got a liking for sport?
Yes, there were. Well, I mean, I had already got a very good training and liking for swimming when I was down in Eastbourne. I had an exceptionally good teacher, one of the masters, well, the headmaster's son there, who taught me swimming. And I had played round ball football then, but that was the last time I did. And it was at Ashstead where I got a lot more, well, cricket. I'd had cricket at Eastbourne too. Cricket also, and rugby, swimming. We couldn't do any tennis. I think that was only the girls who did that.
You, one often hears about boarding schools, about sort of fairly harsh discipline, either from the staff or the or fellow pupils. Did you encounter any of that?
Well, I don't suppose it was really harsh. It was strict. I had the cane a few times and so on, but no, it was, I wouldn't say it was harsh. Just strict and close watch over you and so on.
What about it? You seemed quite impressed with the, you know, with the academic syllabus. What were the exams that you took?
Oh, they were, I forget what they're called now, school certificate. I didn't get matriculation, which is more or less equivalent to A level, I suppose, nowadays. Because I was only 16 when I left, you know, at that time. That was quite normal, because if you went to university, it costs a lot of money. Well, still can do, but I mean, not. In those days, you really had to pay for it. And so the main thing was that if you got as far as 16, if you hadn't left school at 14, you had to go out and look for work.
So there was no. What were you like academically? Were you good or
mediocre? Probably.
No clear recollection then.
No, nothing outstanding, except Latin, which I'd been taught so much of at Eastbourne. In fact, when I went to Ashstead, I was 13 year old or something. I was doing the sixth form's homework for them in Latin because it was so easy for me. And I think I was the only one who took Latin in the, you know, the school certificate exams that year, mainly because I was no good at art, drawing, and I refused to go in for it because it had been so appalling. I probably still can't draw a straight line even with a ruler.
So you came out with your school certificate at the age of 16?
Yes.
Is that the point at which your father got you a place in the bank?
Yes, he did. I had just, two or three weeks perhaps, special holiday, and then went into the bank in Gracechurch Street in London. And then after, I think, about a year there, I was moved up to, well, it was St. Martin's Lane, where they had a branch. But then they were closing that because it was a bit antique. And we opened a new branch in Oceanic House in the corner of Pall Mall. Yes, that was it. And with a very good position, because we saw the King and Queen, George VI, and Mary had their coronation from there. We were right on the route.
What was that like? Do you have any clear impressions of that?
Well, it was interesting to do the job, to learn the job. We had all kinds of, in that branch, we had all kinds of foreign people with accounts. South African we dealt a lot with at the time. One of them, I remember, remember was had up on some big charge. I think it was fraud of some kind. Anyway, made it interesting. And we also had some of the big soap manufacturers who were, well, they were up in Newcastle actually, but this bank there. And, we had quite a few people who were in the theatre and on the stage. Yes, it was very interesting.
What were your exact duties? Can you remember after all this time?
Well, I can't remember the first, just a general clerk looking after accounts, adding up figures, which in those days were LSD, a little bit more complicated than pounds and pence now. You didn't really have any machines to do it either, you just had to do it. And there was a balance taken every night, so it had to be right, you know. And yes, that's really all I can remember, and filling in a few entries in ledgers and so on. That had to be all done by hand in those days.
Requirement for good handwriting, was there?
Yes, really, yes. Yes, I had to be able to read it. Read your writing and your figures. Mm.
Yes, one hears horror stories of of balances that are out by a halfpenny, and you go through it all again.
Oh, you did.
It was really that.
It really was, yes. And if you did overtime, which happened on balance dates, the special half-yearly balance dates, you didn't work overtime till you'd been there at least 3.5 hours, I think. And that is maybe 9 o'clock in the evening. Then you got overtime at, I forget, some stupid amount, which didn't pay a fraction of what it cost you to get on the railway or to eat anything. Anyway, that was life. I know when I left, I think I was getting the massive sum of 32 and sixpence in those days, and that was London West End job, and that would be what, £1.12 and 6,
160 pence,
yeah, something like that. And that included, from that you had to be able to feed yourself for lunch in the week and take yourself to and from Wallington by train and so on.
Did you consider that at the time to be poorly paid or reasonably well paid?
Rather poorly, yes. There were people who might have been getting as much as £2 a week then, or even... even a little more than that, but yes, it was rather poor.
Was this in the context of prospects? You know, you were expected perhaps to put up with that for a few years in the prospect of something much better coming on later.
Well, you had to take exams in the meantime, go to night classes, take exams, and according to how you worked out in your exam results, you might go a little faster or a little slower up the scale. But you didn't just go up automatically. You had to show some result before you moved up a bit. And it wasn't a very good... Well, that's why I say it seemed an awful long time before I was ever going to get anywhere. And with the uncertainty of Germany and all that kind of thing, because even in 1938 it had been a bit dicey, you never knew just what was going to happen.
Mm. You obviously weren't very enamoured with the bank when you got there. But how much say did you have in this when you took the job? Was this something arranged for you, or did you have any say in it?
No, it was really arranged for me because I had no idea what I wanted to do or could do, really. So when this was put in front of me, well, it seemed quite a good prospect. But as I say, you can't tell. You see, I was hoping that eventually I would get away to Canada or South Africa or somewhere where they had a branch, and so on. But just when that would have been under normal circumstances, I can't imagine.
When you were at your boarding schools, did you get involved in the Army Cadet Force or anything like that?
No. No, there wasn't anything like that going on. Not at the schools I was at. And I don't know where I got the idea of going into the police or eventually into the Army. Well, in the Army, I thought maybe I could work my way up, perhaps towards a commission. But of course I didn't realise that when I joined the Army, about 6 months later, there was going to be a war starting. But that had been the original intention or idea. It just didn't happen.
So you can't you can't remember the origin of this idea of going into the police force?
Well, I rather fancied the idea of joining the police at that time. I was big enough. I thought I was fit enough. But as I say, somebody had spotted this thing which he said was a varicose vein, and they turned me down on that. So I didn't even know I had it. In fact, I scarcely know now as I've got it. And that was a long time ago.
So what finally decided you to make this quite big leap from banking to uniform service? Was it just the boredom of the thing, as you said earlier?
Really, it was the boredom, yes, I would say. I hadn't any special guide. I had no guide. I hadn't any special inclination at the time. Mind you, there were a few people who had joined the Royal Air Force, whatever it, you know, the like trainees in that section. But I thought, no, I wouldn't do that. I'd go for the Army, and I was rather more interested in mechanical things than I was in, just walking.
There's no question of joining your father in the business then, because, I mean, that's mechanical, I suppose, you know, dealing with cars.
Yes, but not at that time. It was a reasonable business, but it didn't have any big future to it. And, of course, again, 6 months later, that dropped away altogether when the war started. So it wouldn't have been any use to me then. I would have had to have joined up and probably been dragged in anyway instead of volunteering. Not that it necessarily did me an awful lot of good volunteering, but still, I did get some choice as to where I went.
You said you had an interest in things mechanical. I mean, had that sort of manifested itself in any way? I mean, did you have a car or a motorbike or something?
No, I didn't have any vehicle like that, but I was always interested in what made them go and how it made them go and anything mechanical.
Did you sort of get the chance to put that into practice? I mean, you know, night school or something with engines or whatever?
No, that all came when I got in the Army. Learning. I had fiddled around in the works occasionally in the holidays, just helping them out with something or other. But I never really got down to the nitty-gritty of the engineering part of it. Could I?
How did you find out about where to go to join up for the army?
Well, it was a place I almost passed by every day going to work, really. They call it Great Scotland Yard or something, near to Northumberland Avenue up Whitehall. And there was an army recruiting office there. You could see it as you walked up Whitehall, and they probably had a sign out on the Whitehall anyway saying that this was the way, sort of thing. And so that's how I knew where to go. At least I went there, first of all, I think sometime in February 39, just to find out about things. And although it was actually 14th April when I got my calling up paper, as you might say. And so I'd already been through, you had to go through a very simple sort of test on whether you could spell or write or read or anything else like that. And you were in the army, you know, as long as you breathed, you were there.
Isn't there some kind of a sort of swearing in or signing up ceremony or official thing? Did you do that in the office or?
I did that in the recruiting office, yes. I've got the actual paper here still, 14th April 1939, when I got my first shilling, King's shilling. Yes. I think all I had to do was to swear in front of this recruiting sergeant. I don't think there was anything more onerous than that.
So, but apart from your desire to get out of what you obviously considered to be rather boring side of banking, was there any other element? I mean, what were your view about the international situation and the likelihood of war and so on?
Well, I think almost everybody felt there was likely to be a war, the way that Germany was carrying on, especially since the 1938 when they went into Austria. No, was it Czechoslovakia then? Whichever. They, you know, felt, yes, it was all building up because they were building up a big army and all modern equipment. You felt it was more or less bound to happen, but didn't really expect it quite as soon as it did happen.
Yeah.
And yes.
So it was this. Was this a general feeling, or just something that you felt most particularly? I mean, all your colleagues at the office and socially?
No, I think everybody felt it. Everybody, yes, even the black shirts and so on, the communists, everybody, you know, there was all this friction, as usual, between them, the fascists and the communists and all this kind of thing. There was a general feeling, I would say, amongst very large part of the population anyway, that something was bound to happen before too long.
How did that affect your decision?
Well, it didn't really. What's that? It didn't really affect my decision. I was going to go there anyway, you know, into the army. And I just carried on and did it. I thought, well, if a war comes, it's too bad I'm in, but can't do anything about it.
Yes, you were saying about friction between the various political elements. I mean, do you have any direct knowledge of that? Any direct experience of that?
No, not myself. But there were, it was always plenty of it reported on the radio and